treats and coffee, and then thanks to Felipe for getting here and getting our coffee made. This is a long-standing tradition started by my predecessor, Bob Kemper, the Ash Wednesday worship service, followed by coffee and then a faith reflection. Many years it is from a lay member of the church, but we have oftentimes asked staff as well on occasions to do this. And so I'll leave it to Catherine. She needs no introduction at this point. So.
Thank you, Rich. So this is not amplifying my voice in here, but it's making it so anybody who might be live streaming can hear. So I would love to start with a prayer, if that's okay. I know we just prayed, but we can always pray again. Gracious God, we are grateful for your presence among us now. Bless the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts, that they might be acceptable in your sight. Amen. Well, I feel like you all already know what my faith journey has been, so it feels funny. I kept thinking, well, is there anything they don't know? But maybe sometimes there's hearing a story that you might have heard before still brings new insights, new perspectives. And, you know, maybe there's parts of my story that you haven't heard. I do tend to be an open book, and I've written a few. So there's, like, a lot of existing material. If you really wanted to know about my faith story, it exists. But I did think about sort of what the journey has been, sort of highlights. I won't keep you here all day. But there's a lot, and that feels like a real blessing to look back and recognize all of the ways that the Spirit has been present in my life, and that I've been incredibly fortunate and grateful to respond to the Spirit and the guidance of God in my life. I grew up in a United Methodist church in a family that attended church fairly regularly, and I, you know, did pageants and things like that when I was growing up. One of my early powerful experiences was not a Christmas pageant, but a play at a different time of year. It was the story of Jesus healing the man who'd been brought in through the roof, and I was the owner of the house, and I had a monologue. I was, like, the only one who got a monologue. So I didn't get to play Jesus, but I got lines. And I just, I loved it. I loved being part of the story. I remember having all kinds of questions about what we were doing and what it meant. And it was just to be part of it, included. And I think that's one of the reasons why the pageant ministry has always been so important to me, because giving the kids that opportunity to be the ones telling the story, it just, that was one of my early powerful experiences. In youth group in middle school, we weren't a particularly, I don't know how to say it. Like, we always sang before we ate in my family, but we weren't, like, I don't know, we weren't there every Sunday. We were like, you know, just, we were members of the church. And but in youth group, I bonded with some friends, and I was really into it. And then one of our youth group trips when I was in the seventh grade, was to go to a concert. Does anyone know the name Carmen? Okay, one person knows Carmen. Okay, so he was a really popular evangelical pop, contemporary Christian music artist. And at the end of the concert, he had an altar call. And he invited anybody who wanted to accept Jesus as their Lord and Savior to come down. And I was like, I don't know what's going on, but all my friends are going, so I guess I'm going to go too. And I went down, and I, you know, we prayed with somebody. They gave us little Gospel of John tracts. I think my mother was a little confused, because she's like, well, we were just in church last Sunday, so how did you just become a Christian? But it was a different way of understanding what it meant to become a Christian. It was a tradition that did kind of focus on having a moment of conversion. And the thing that was hard about that is that I thought I should feel differently afterward. I thought there should be some sort of experience beyond just looking around at my friends and then walking down, and you know, I didn't feel any different in my heart. And I started to, it really kind of both started the journey in a deeper way. You know, I realized I really was seeking. I was a seeker. But I also, it started this feeling of like, this anxiety that there was something I was missing, and maybe everybody else had it because they were all like crying, and like I was just like, oh, I'm supposed to be crying and I'm not crying, you know, just this sort of disconnect of that I should be experiencing something that I wasn't experiencing. And so I tried again. I went to a Billy Graham crusade and I was in the choir, and then there was a altar call at the Billy Graham crusade. I think it was at the old municipal stadium in Cleveland. And once again, I went down. I was like, we're gonna, you know, round two. It's gonna work this time. It's gonna take. I'm gonna feel it. And kind of the same thing happened. It was just this, it was kind of an emotional experience. It was a social experience. Once again, I was there with friends. But I walked away thinking, but where's like the thing that makes me feel different? And so that was probably, I don't know, that might have been like around eighth grade. And I really started to like just, I kind of went from like getting saved at Billy Graham to not believing in God like real quick. And because I was struggling with this disconnect. And so I started really asking a lot of questions. But I didn't just like drift away and say, oh, I'm not interested in that. I went like crazy about trying to learn everything about world religions and figure out what was the right one. I remember I had this notebook and we newly had the internet, so I was like Googling Hinduism and like, should I be Hindu, and Buddhism, and you know, and around that time, I think my dad noticed that I was really interested in religion, and that's how I would say it. I was interested in religion and I was interested in God, and it was the sort of intellectual pursuit in some ways. Like I really wanted to understand what this was all about, and if there was some truth, I wanted to find it. And my dad gave me a book. The Tao of Pooh was really popular. It was sort of like a Winnie the Pooh and Buddhism mashup. And he gave me one of the books in that series. And it kind of a popular religion book. Not like, you know, deep theology or anything like that. But I just like loved it because it was talking about things that really mattered. It was speaking with some authority about the tradition. It was about books, which I was already, I don't know if you figured this out, but I was already a little nerd in the making. And so this gift of this religion book ended up being really powerful, like symbol of what would end up becoming kind of most important to me along the way. Those voices of wisdom that come to us through the written word. Probably a little more lasting than, you know, the Karman effect and the Billy Graham effect was the wisdom that came out of a book. I still was questioning and doubting, and I went through, I went to church camp, as many kids do. I went to a church camp that's a little different. It was at the Lakeside Chautauqua, so some of you know the Chautauqua format. So it wasn't like a wilderness camp with cabins. We you know, went downtown and had ice cream during our breaks. And during that time, I was really, again, aware that I was not feeling God. I wasn't sure if I believed in God. I wanted desperately to, but I still felt this disconnect. And I ended up confessing all of this for the first time, told an adult, a trusted adult. His name was Mike Denton. He was in seminary at Chicago Theological Seminary, but had grown up at the same church. He was, at one point, he became the association minister here for this church. Well, he was a great person to unburden myself of all this spiritual angst. I was also having my first latte ever during this conversation. So, like, that's a really big deal. Like, spiritual confession, wonderful, loving response with, like, and again, he said, I think there's some books you should read. I still remember some of the books he told me to read. And he also said, you know, sometimes you have to let go of let go of figuring it out and just do the work of faith. Like, love your neighbor, walk humbly with your God. And that and the latte, wow. I mean, it was like a serious spiritual experience. And then about, I don't know, 3 or 4 months later, I started exchanging letters with him and his wife. They were both in seminary at the time, his then wife. And I wrote them a letter. Not sure you believe in God. Like, this isn't the way. And then their response just, like, knocked my socks off because they said, oh, we already knew that. Like, wait, what? I didn't expect that. I thought it would, again, be met with this sort of, well, I mean, you have to figure everything out first before you, you know, start talking about becoming a pastor. But at that point, I started paying attention to what pastors did. I saw that they spent time with people. I saw that they spent time writing because they preached sermons. And that, like, at the time, I wanted to be a writer, and then I looked and saw, like, part of what a pastor is a writer. Maybe not all, I mean, some pastors don't write their sermons. They preach without a manuscript, but I was seeing that was the doorway into which I was I was invited into this life. And it just from there unfolded. For a while I thought, if I don't know if I believe in God, maybe I could be Unitarian Universalist, because that there's like all this, like, you know, theological diversity. Some Unitarian Universalists aren't necessarily theists, but then I started worshiping with a Unitarian church in college, and I desperately missed Jesus. And I realized that the story of Jesus and the story of a God who loves us so much that he becomes flesh and moves into the neighborhood and can be known and seen and responded to, it actually did have a hold on me that I hadn't even understood. And so then in college, I did spend a remarkable amount of time trying to figure out where in the Christian church I fit. And so my first stop was Quakers. It was great because I was like, it was an unprogrammed worship. And so nobody was saying anything that, like, I thought, well, I don't know if I believe in that. Like, there's nobody. It was mostly silent. And then somebody would stand and offer a reflection. But there was no dogma. There was no ritual. But then it turned out I kind of missed the ritual, and I continued to feel called to ministry, but I knew that they didn't have ordained ministers in the Quaker tradition. And so then during that time, I would go to the Quakers in the morning, and then I would go to the Vineyard Church in the evening, which is like super evangelical, kind of praise music style. I mean, so I was really like, I mean, it was wild days back in my college days. Other people were, you know, I understand there's things called frat parties. I never went to one because I was too busy going to all the churches I could possibly go to. And then I was invited to apply for a position as a youth pastor in an Episcopal church. I was 20, and the oldest kid was 19. So I didn't know what I was doing, but there was a small youth group. It was a great community of faith. It ended up being the community. Ben and I were married in an Episcopal church. And by that point, I did kind of fall in love with the Eucharist as a way to experience communion with one another and with Christ. And so, but I couldn't imagine myself as a priest. I just couldn't. I started the ordination process to become an Episcopal priest, and it was a failure of imagination. I didn't see it, and if I couldn't see it, I couldn't do it. And so I ended up, I was a religion minor at that point, and one of my professors was an ordained Disciples of Christ pastor, and his wife was the campus pastor for the ecumenical ministries at my college. And I ended up joining their little country church like an hour away, and became a Disciples of Christ, member of the Disciples of Christ. And that was the denomination that I was affiliated with when I went to seminary. Even when I went to seminary, I kept thinking, but I don't think I feel God the way I'm supposed to. This is, something's wrong with me. And again, looking back, I think, oh my gosh, you moved across the country to start seminary and pursue a life of ministry, even though you didn't have certainty. That is literally the definition of like faith. And yet I always was kind of defining it in a way that I was outside of what it meant to be faithful. But the Disciples was an amazing amazing communion of a denomination to be a part of, and it did feel like home to me. And it's a sister tradition of the United Church of Christ. And so I just talked about this on Sunday. When I was right out of seminary, I was ordained at 24, which is so young. I don't think some rental car companies will rent to 24-year-olds, and I was ordained. And that church welcomed me and let me be their pastor, even as they were teaching me what that meant. But we knew California was not going to be our forever home. And so coming here was an absolute call. I still remember reading the classified ad for this job. It was like 4 sentences long. And I knew that was going to be where we were going to go. I just knew it. And I had to wait until the search committee knew it. But when I know something, I know something. And I knew it. And so it was a practice in discernment, you know, every step of the way, confirming this like deep gut instinct that I had no like evidence or reason to believe would be the case, but I knew it would be. It was 14 years ago this week, really, that I came here and met everyone and we all concurred that it was the right call. And serving here has given me the opportunity to continue living those questions, continue sometimes feeling that angst, but also an extraordinary amount of experiences that confirm the goodness of God, the nearness of God, and the gift of living that faith out in community. And I think about, I really am almost done. I keep watching the time. I think about that, like, early first experience that of, you know, getting saved at the Carmen concert. There's a part of me that for years was kind of snarky about it, and I still like poke fun at what it was. At the same time, all of the elements were there. I was in community. Now granted, when you're in seventh grade, that also means peer pressure, but it was community. I was looking around at what we were experiencing together. And it was about music, and for me, music continues to be one of the most powerful ways to experience the presence of God, particularly in community, when people are making music together. That is transformative. And it was about responding to seeking and responding to the call. And those are all things that are still very much a part of what my faith is today. So I'm very grateful to be here. I'm very, I can't finish sentences when I try to talk about how I am about this season of transition. I'll miss this congregation more than I can say. I love you, and I love this church, and I do feel that same sense of deep knowing that this is the next right step, but it's hard. And I'm grateful. I'm grateful to you, and I'm grateful to God, who has very clearly been on all the twists and turns and angsty conversations. So, thank you.
Lovely. It brings our Ash Wednesday and the beginning of the season of Lent to its conclusion this day. But if you are willing, please rise or rise in spirit. And I will ask you to lead us in the doxology, but we'll just sing the doxology together. But I will absolutely turn off my mic.